So this is the regularly scheduled quarterly meeting of the Forest Practices Board. Thank you for coming back, for some of you, for a second day after a pretty long day yesterday, just trying to figure out where we are and how we need to be informed so we can make decisions today. Patricia?
Yes?
Would you please give us a safety briefing?
Good morning and welcome to the Natural Resources Building. At this time, I ask you to silence any noise-making devices that you have, please. In the event of a fire, alarms will sound and flash. In the event of an earthquake, alarms may not sound and flash. Please drop to the floor and cover your head as best as you can or go under a table. In any evacuation of the building, staff will lead you out the building using the double doors in the front of the room. Then the first door on your left, moving east towards the grassy area along Jefferson Street. There, DNR employees are trained and equipped to assist you in checking in and responding to any emergencies. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. So, let's introduce ourselves and staff, and we'll start off with Jeff Davis. Jeff has been designated as the Fish and Wildlife Rep for today. Since Joe couldn't make it here today, so you want to say hi or
hi. once again, I'm Joe Storr's stunt devil today. Looks like I chose maybe the best day to be the stunt devil, which may mean I'm very expendable.
Morning, I'm Noel Willett. I'm the Union Timber Products representative.
Good morning, I'm Dave Herrera, I'm General Public Member.
Good morning, I'm Bob Gunther, General Public Member, and I represent the small landowners.
Good morning, Heather Balish, Department of Commerce designee.
Stephen Bernath, Commissioner of Public Lands, designee and chair.
Morning, everybody. Tom Laurie, Ecology, designee.
Carmen Smith, Arl Smith Logging.
Good morning, Brent Davis, General Public.
Morning, Patrick Apper, the Director's Designee for the Washington State Department of Agriculture.
Good morning, Tom Nelson, General Public.
Lisa Janicki, Skagit County Commissioner, representing the all counties.
Staff.
Good morning, Joe Schrammick, Forest Practices Division Manager.
Phil Ferrister, Senior Counsel, Attorney General's Office.
Mark Engel, DNR Assistant Division Manager.
Patricia Anderson, Rules Coordinator, DNR.
Thank you. Just talking about agenda, Hillary is running a little late, so we'll get started with the agenda here really quick. We are going to add the only change in the agenda I foresee, other than switching some things around in the morning to help work with Hillary's timing, is to add, Ecology wants to bring a motion on how to move forward on adaptive management this afternoon. So we'll do that after lunch. And where did I put that? It'll probably be after we deal with the CEMER Master Project Schedule and Budget. We'll add an action item after that. So, skipping down to, can we do the approval of minutes really quick? Patricia, you want to? So would somebody have, thank you.
I move approval of the minutes of February 8th, 2017.
Second. Thank you. Board Member Gunther seconds the motion. Any comments from the board members on last meeting's agenda? Fantastic. Would everybody in favor of the motion please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody against, same sign. Any abstentions? Thank you, David.
Okay.
Board Member Herrera and Board Member Davies abstain from the minutes motion. The motion passes. The other thing I will do while we're waiting for Hillary to come up, I'll go ahead and start off on my report from the chair. So the first thing I want to talk about is we've had a really wet winter and spring up in our northeast part of the state. I just wanted to let the board know we've had a record precipitation month in March for the northeast, as well as either October or November last year. We're running at 110 to 150% of normal in precipitation. Temperatures have been below average. Snowpack is 110 to 125% of normal in Northeast. The soil moisture has been at 95% percentile, which means we've had 200 to 400% SC slope conditions. What that means is we've had a lot of slides up in Northeast Washington on the upwards of a number of 160 up there. Everything from really small side cast slope failures along the roads to fairly big things. If you can talk to some of the county commissioners, there's a lot of roads closed, etc. There is nothing pinpointing any one thing other than precipitation events we've been having this winter up in that area. We have been working closely with local government to triage each of these events to determine whose jurisdiction each one goes in, whether it's state lands, forest practices, DOT, or county government. As a practice, those that fall in the forest practices bucket, we go out and investigate those. But because there's so many numerous ones, it's going to take some time to look into what's going on. So I just wanted to alert people to that. The other thing that has occurred about a week ago, the governor declared an emergency for all the Northeast counties because of this, and a couple of the rest of the counties just because of the rainfall that has occurred. So I just wanted to alert the board to that. Second item, legislative report. Just wanted to do that really quick. There are only two bills that have been passed through the legislature that resulted in some action that might affect forest practices. The first one is House Bill 1531. It mostly acknowledges that FREPs, forest riparian easements, that are identified as a part of small landowner opportunities, are sequester carbon. And it tells us that we need to share that information once the state has a climate strategy, which they don't at this present time, on how to deal with things like carbon counting and so forth. So I just want to really thank the landowners and the environmental folks for talking about this bill and coming to language that everybody could agree to. The second bill I'll just mention really quickly is House Bill 1275. It was signed 2 days ago. It's intended to further streamline permitting around forest practice hydraulic permits. And it eliminates the need for forest landowners who will be doing road work near Type S streams from having to go and get shoreline development permits for those permits. Next topic, budget. So So as you all know, the legislature is still in session. They're on their first special session. There are rumors of an anticipated second special session. We're starting to gear up just in case there's a threat of a government shutdown again. But the real meat here is the Senate has taken $1.1 million of our operating budget, and the House, we are in good shape, so we appreciate that. And we also, I wanted to shout out to the Knolls, WFPA, the commissioner, and the governor, all have written letters to the Senate leadership to support reinstating the money for our operating budget, so thank you. And then I just wanted to mention, as I have in the past at times, as we all grow a few more gray hairs, we have, DNR has retirements, and I just want to recognize two DNR people that I'm aware of, and this may not be a complete list, so I don't want to leave anybody out, but there are people I know and I've worked with for over 25 years. Bob Anderson from our Northeast region, who's district manager up there, will be retiring this summer. Art Tasker, the regional manager at South Puget, who's been with the department over 40 years, will be retiring this summer. And someone from the AG's office, for those of you who have worked for our AG's, Cheryl Nielsen, who had worked for the AG's office for 26 years, I believe. And she had almost solely, been the force practices attorney on specific force practice appeals, et cetera. And she retired at the end of April. And we're going to be missing her because a lot of knowledge walked out the door of the AG's office when that occurred. So, going back to the agenda. Well, let me suggest, Patricia, do you have a list of people that are signed up for general public comment, please?
Yes.
So just a reminder, this is an opportunity for people to comment on general board topics. Any action item will have a separate public comment period, particularly for that action. Oh, good timing. I'm going to delay that. So, I'll take that back. Thank you. All right. So, one of the things that we'd like, Commissioner, would you like to come up to the table along with Heather Bartlett? So one of the things we wanted to do today is recognize all the work that landowners have put into road maintenance management plans. And I'm going to start this out, and then our guests are going to follow up, and Jeff. And then I'd like to hear from any board members if you have any additional comments, and then we'll hand out some certificates to landowners, thanking them for their work. So, you know, our map, I'm taking a little bit of personal thing because I've been working on this since the early 90s. And at that time, it became clear through some compliance reviews, and specifically in the mid-90s through watershed analysis, that roads were out of compliance on forest land for a good part of the time. And one of the things that watershed analysis does is those landowners who started doing that started requiring our maps to be done. That got incorporated then into the forest and fish negotiations. And that was important for a couple of reasons. One is we had new standards that were adopted as part of forest and fish. So we had a 100-year flood standard, plus debris that was adopted, plus we were going to fix all the fish passage things. And the important part about this is it became a cornerstone of not just Forest and Fish, but the HCP. And the federal services looked at it as mitigation, short-term mitigation, the 15-year window of doing our maps, while we're regrowing RMZs, which is a decadal process. So I think that's important to know. And the landowners willingly, the large landowners, I'll be clear about that, willingly agreed to do this over a 15-year time period without any public financing. So we appreciate that. And let me just hand that off to you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. I apologize for the delay. I had traffic and our roads that we actually go on and have not been abandoned are still extremely challenging. All probably have experienced. So I appreciate your patience and also the opportunity here. Obviously, I'm Hillary Franz, the newly elected Commissioner of Public Lands, and I think it's I always appreciate these moments because it helps us recognize the enormous amount of work that has gone into being able to make sure that our forest lands are healthier environments, as well as the context of tenacity and persistence, especially when you take into consideration not only the length of time, but also that we faced a very deep recession during that time. And so I wanna thank everyone for that tenacity, especially the 43 companies that have completed the projects on time. And as a result, and I think I'm always a big fan of sharing the numbers, because I think the numbers really speak loudly for the importance, the value, and the honor that we should be giving to those 43 companies who stayed with it, even in dark and challenging times. So as a result of the efforts of these companies, over 50,000 miles of road, forest roads, was assessed. 25,000 miles of road was upgraded, and given how much miles of roads that we have in the state that could use its own upgrading, you can fully take that in and appreciate it. 6,000 fish passage barriers were replaced, and 3,500 miles of fish habitat was opened up. About $300 million of private investment went into this program, and I think this shows the power of public-private partnerships to the advantage of all Washingtonians for generations to come. We place that number of $300 million of investment in the context of our current challenge with legislature and budget and having to be able to continue to fund key elements that will make sure that our environment and our economy and our communities are strong. And without the investments of our private companies and our private sector, we would not be as successful and effective. And I'd love to just thank everyone and thank the companies for their effort, their tenacity and persistence, especially when I think about how old I was in the early 90s. So thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, Commissioner Franz and Chair Bernal, for the opening remarks. Director Balancenso regrets that she's not able to be here to celebrate this accomplishment. It really is an honor for me to be here, though, with my DNR and DFW colleagues to acknowledge and celebrate the accomplishments, in part because 15 years ago, I was a fisheries biologist working for Department of Fish and Wildlife in North Central Washington. I got to see the before, so to speak, and then witness some of the early years of implementation. It was really rewarding and heartening from a field biologist perspective to begin to see some of the barriers removed and the roads eliminated. And as access was restored and the habitat upstream was continuing to improve, the fish were responding positively. So little did I know, 15 years ago, I would get to be here today to celebrate this accomplishment in our forest and fish journey. So it's really a privilege and honor for me. Thank you. The accomplishment is certainly something to be proud of because sediment pollution from our forested roads is identified as one of the largest concerns probably globally on our forested roads. The forest and fish partners here in the state sought to change that dynamic, and they've done so that's really rewarding. And then Ecology certainly appreciates and commends the commitments of these landowners, because it has been, as Commissioner Franz pointed out, the tenacity and persistence really has paid off, and so that's something to celebrate. It's a success from our perspective in water quality. It's a success for fish and treaty rights, and I hope it's a success perceived by the landowners, because now they have more robust and secure roads. So thank you, and congratulations.
Joe Storr Jr. Director Unsworth sends his deepest apologies for not being here in person. As you might imagine, Department of Fish and Wildlife fish passage is a really big deal to us for many of the reasons Heather mentioned. Fish production helps us have healthy fish populations and healthy and sustainable fisheries, which are also a big economic driver in the state of Washington and part of our history and culture. I've been pretty vocal about my support and appreciation for the forest landowners' efforts to remove barriers and improve the road system. And that'll go on and on, at least in my career, which could end maybe at the end of today. But I also want to highlight that nobody saw the economic downturn coming that we experienced, and I think it's really important that no matter what was happening financially, the forest landowners really leaned into it and held the commitment that they made sitting around the table in forest and fish. And that's pretty significant, that they were laying people off and still kept pushing forward to deliver these improvements under RMAP. So thank you very much for that. Some people think that we just do things and we never really know what the results are. And I want to share with all of you that there's a lot of emerging science around the fish production improvements that are made just by allowing fish access to habitat that they haven't been able to access. We have some of our own science that's starting to show that by tracking the genetic offspring and tracking their return as adults, it's vastly improving production. So that's a really good thing. I also, sometimes we lose sight of, we're doing barrier corrections for fish. And yet the way we did barrier correction under RMAPs really allowed us to improve the overall watershed health. We think about passing fish, that's really cool from my perspective. But the way we did it on the ground also allowed more natural sediment transport through the system. So while you're providing fish passage upstream, you're also allowing sediment and wood to go downstream to maintain healthy habitat downstream, which also helps us with production. Maybe lastly, I look forward to continuing to work with forest landowners who have, in my opinion, really led fish barrier correction in the state, how to do it successfully. We know that we have to continue to work together, because there's folks that are downstream of these investments that still are blocking the potential maximization of the investments that forest landowners make. So I look forward to a long partnership with forest landowners, putting the pressure on folks downstream and continuing that TFW spirit and collaboration.
Are there other board members that would like to say a few words about this?
Mr. Chair.
Board Member Gunther.
I would just say that this is a great giant step, and I really appreciate it on the part of the large landowners to do that. I also would hope that we could continue putting pressure on the legislature to help the FFFP as well as FREP. Because when you look at those small landowners, they're not blessed with the opportunity to do a lot of these conversions that need to be done on their lands. And I think with the example that's been set here by the large landowners and continued work with the legislature, I think that we can get to the point that we've got a complete package.
Thank you.
Board Member Nelson.
You've got it right to me. thank you. I just wanted to chime in. The company I work for took advantage of the extension during the recession
Our sawmills ran at about 80% through the recession, but part of the reason was that we bought one tree farm in particular that had been cut pretty hard, and about 70% of the tree farm was under the age of 25, so we weren't logging very much, but we had an annual RMAP budget over $2 million, which we knew going in, and it was a little hard to explain to the owners that didn't live in Washington that this was something that was part of the deal. But they accepted that, and so we took the extension for about the last 10% of our RMAP obligations, so we're not going to be on the list today. But I wanted to, what I really wanted to say was that it's nice to be appreciated. It's nice to have the acknowledgement that you folks are bringing forward. It's shared by the people in the field. I want to especially single out the tribes. We go out and look at our FPAs, and there's always a very a strong feeling from the tribes, as well as the state agencies, about the RMAP work that we've been doing. It's appreciated on the ground, too. It's not just here in Olympia. So I wanted to point that out. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other?
I just wanted to, Board Member Herrera. Thank you. I wanted to follow up on the comment about the tribes. Excuse me. And the tribes are co-managers of the resources here, and you know, we come to this process, we engage in this process to try to solve some of the problems we don't have a lot of control over, but our maps are here. The, you know, we're dealing with private landowners, and so the way that we've been forced in some cases to deal with things is through litigation, and we've been successful in most cases when we go to court. That's a difficult, long, expensive road, and so I'm really happy with the outcome of the RMAP process because it shows what we can accomplish by working together and not going that litigation route. And we're still, you know, we sued over culverts, we're still hung up years later over culverts, so you know, that's another area we have to continue to work on. But I appreciate the effort of the industry here, the landowners, and a lot of tribal staff involvement in getting to this agreement, and the staffs at the agencies, and even all of the environmental groups that helped get us here. I wanted to say we really appreciate that, and call this a success, and Board Member Gunther said, let's identify the other issues we need to tackle, like we have today. Mm-hmm. And then we can figure out how we can continue to work together to get more of those things checked off and done. So, thank you.
Board Member Davies?
I just wanted to also thank so many people, the landowners, tribes, restoration groups, the agencies, for all of this work that is really hard work, expensive. It's taken a while, but it's very impressive. And it's, all those numbers that the commissioner cited are hugely significant. And they also translate to meaningful jobs in areas of the state that really need them. And I know we have a lot more work to do, and a lot of people are still working hard on these restoration projects, and just want to say how much we appreciate that work.
Two final comments before, unless there are other board members that want to say anything. One is, I wanted to take off on what Board Member Nelson said. This celebration is not to take away from the fact that we do have, we did negotiate an extension to RMAPs, particularly for those companies that were, the excuse at the time was the recession, and that's a real excuse. So we have 58 more RMAPs to get done, and I don't want to at all take away from the fact that some of our companies are still working hard, and they have done good work, and we look forward to celebrating their finishing of their RMAPs when we're done. And there is an ongoing obligation by all landowners to continue to keep their roads
from putting sediment in the stream, minimizing the number of roads they need, and to keep those fish passage barriers functioning. I also want to just celebrate the fact each DNR region has an RMAP specialist, and they work closely with all these partners. And I just want to, I didn't ask them to come today, but I just want to recognize Eric Keller in Northeast, Tony Gilmer in Southeast, Shannon Clark in Northwest, Rich Wood in South Puget, Russ Hovey in Pacific Cascade, and Dory Broglino in Olympic Region as being the leads for DNR on this issue as we continue to work on this. So, Patricia, do you have the certificates? And I guess I would suggest, why don't you want to just call people up and those that are present, maybe the three agency folks can set us up for congratulation, and then out, and then people would like to probably go outside for a photo or something.
All right, Tanum Irrigation District. Alco Holdings. Aloha Lumber. American Forest Resources. Arbor Pacific Forestry Services, Grandy Lake Forest. Arden Tree Farms. Bearing Timber. Bascom Pacific, the Campbell Group. Lodell Timberlands. C&G Timber. Campbell Global. City of Bremerton. City of Montesano. Forecastle Timber. Forest Capital Partners, Hancock Timber Resource Group.
Oh, yay!
Yay. Yay.
So it'd be like Hancock. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, congratulations.
One of us can.
Thank you very much.
GMO Fund, 8. Grays Harbor County, Green Crow Corporation. Yay!
Alphabetical order there.
Thanks. Green, congratulations.
We got these.
Thank you very much.
We have two.
Oh, look at that.
Oh, is it really?
Might be, but I'll check.
Okay, all right.
Could have been called earlier.
Bennett Lumber, the Herbrand Company, Hancock Renewable Energy Group.
Oh, here again.
Yay! Inland Empire Paper, Keystone Forest Investments, Mankey Lumber Company, Menasha Forest Products, New Growth Olympus, Muckleshoot Federal Corporation, North Cascades Timberland, Orm Timber Operating Company, Hope Resources. Seattle City Light, Seafeld Corporation, Springboard Wallace Falls, Campbell Global, Stimson Lumber.
Oh, wait, wait, wait. Whoa. Nobody can call us Seafeld.
Stimson Lumber, TC&I Chinook, The Nature Conservancy, The Timber Exchange, Vagan Brothers Lumber, Vagan, WACFTA, now I know why you wanted me to do this. WACFTA, Western Pacific Timber. All right.
Thank you. For those of you who were here, if you'd like to step outside with the commissioner and Heather and Jeff for a minute so we can get a picture for, we're going to be putting out a press release tomorrow, so we'd like to do that. And then on when we get to a break, we've got cake. So,
all right.
So we can, everybody can have a piece of cake.
Yeah.
All right. Now we'll head into public comment. Okay. Tricia.
Yes.
Excuse me? Last call for photographs.
We're all winners. Kim Miller. All right. Here we go.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath and members of the board. I'm Ken Miller, representing Washington Farm Forestry Association. I've heard people say that the definition of insanity is trying the same thing over and over and expecting a different result. I guess that makes me insane for continuing to ask the board to have a short field trip to our tree farm about 20 minutes from here. We are having a mini forest field day Saturday, June 3rd. You're all welcome. It could be modified to fit your needs. Regardless of the date, we would be very pleased to give you an opportunity to better understand disproportionate impact and why small forest landowners matter, see what our template proposal actually looks like on the ground without lobbying for the merits of the template, allow our community a less intimidating opportunity to share their concerns, as you've rightly done for the tribal community, and also allow us to showcase some of the services provided by the small forest landowner office. Bring your family. We'll make it an enjoyable day, much more than today will be. I'm confident we can meet your needs for understanding in ways that don't burden staff and are appropriate in every way. Just in case insanity actually pays off this time, I'll hang around for questions when you're working on your 2017 work plan agenda and so forth. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ken. Ray Hans.
Chairman Bernath, members of the board, thanks. I also wanted to give a huge shout out to the landowners for accomplishments under our map. I think that's awesome as a lead entity sponsor for Surfboard and a supporter of FFFP, an actual sponsor and implementer of triple FTP projects for small forest landowners. We have a lot of work to do. There's a balance of the landscape to correct AOP problems and get more fish back into the system. So just give you an idea of who the Kalispell tribe is and how we perceive that word.
AOP?
Aquatic passage, yeah, aquatic organism passage.
Sorry.
Names have changed over time. So I'm going to be a little insane too today. You have an opportunity today to provide leadership to this program and a commitment. And I know that change and commitment are tough sometimes to make. They're really difficult decisions to assume that responsibility and take that responsibility on. And you have that opportunity in front of you today to improve the adaptive management program so that as participants in the program, both CEMER and policy can do a better job of bringing you easier decisions to make. Don't put this back in the hands of the problem. I implore that you do not assign this back to policy or CEMER to correct, because that is where the problem lies. And that would be a mistake. So I'll leave you with a piece from Mark Twain. You're never wrong to do the right thing. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Ray. Jim Peters.
Good morning. My name is Jim Peters. It's always an honor and privilege to come and talk in front of you guys. First thing I want to touch on is just what happened a few minutes ago. I want to thank the landowners, put my hands up to you guys for following through with this and also working with us on the extension that we did. It was one of the successes on and examples that we show when our process is working. It works very, very well. So, also, I wanted to put my hands up to the state agencies that dealt with these issues also, dealing with their forested roads. They need that recognition also. And then also everybody's commitment that's going to continue to maintain this system, so we're not having to do some of these things again. They're going to continue. The landowners have committed. Forested landowners, even the state, has committed to keep those roads to standards and keep them working fine so that we don't have these issues. And then also, just think, when we started this, 15, 16 years ago, if the Department of Transportation would have started doing stuff like this back then, the state probably wouldn't be asking the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, after losing a 3-0 decision in that appeal system, for court to be looking at this. So we need to all work together with the counties and the cities. I know some of the companies have reached out to myself and other people, other tribes, to try to get them coming out online using the same type of thing that was successful in the RMAP stuff. And hopefully that will get ahead of a lawsuit towards them. And maybe even if those counties that step up, if there's a case or when there's a case on that part of it, we can go hand in hand to that judge and say, let's take these counties out because they have agreed to a plan, they're implementing the plan, and have them give a stamp of approval, and then we can get out of that court and move on and get the business done. So I want to thank everybody that's been involved in that. The next one, real quickly, adaptive management program. I just wanted to let you guys know the main reason that the tribes, at least the Northwest or the Western Washington tribes, stayed with Forests and Fish when we were down to a handful of tribes, starting off with probably over 20 in those negotiations, down to about five at the end, was the adaptive management program. And a part of that was that it was an independent organization, it was an independent office. Although it's housed here at the NRB, not any one caucus, not any one agency had direction or towards them, and that it was a neutral type of program, just like CEMER is. And although CEMER is housed over at the Northwest Indian Fish Commission, it is not run by the Northwest Indian Fish Commission because it is an independent science group. And there is nobody that is supposed to be able to have that type of influence over both of these type of programs. Does it need to be fixed a little bit and tweaked, just like everything else that we've gone through at TFW and Forests and Fish? We've tweaked it to make it work, and we've adapted, evolved as times have changed to try to work this out. I think part of it is we get back to our principles, and when I talk about the principles, our true TFW policy group, those were the CEOs of the companies. Those were the natural resources directors and elected officials from the tribes. Those were the directors of the agencies being that policy group, along with the conservation caucuses and things. Those people kept people in line through this whole process. If a technical person stepped out and that principal found out by another principal, they would come down, sanction that individual, get them back in line. Well, that's what's going to fix this. Having a system set up that is going to be dictated or directed of who's going to represent what caucus at these different levels, either at policy or CEMER or SAG, is definitely going to start crumbling this system of census cooperation and working these issues out. I know people get frustrated on how long it takes for us to do that, but it is, it takes a long time to work together and get agreement. And if we can just make sure that our representatives at these different levels are playing by the ground rules and that we're not afraid to bring them back in check, then I think we get back to where we were before, and everybody working together in the relationships will start to get stronger out there in the field. So thank you very much, and I hope we have a great day today.
Thank you, Jim. Jane Knell.
Good morning. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members of the board. I'm very excited about cake. Just got to put that out there. So I'm Jenny Knoth. I'm here representing Green Crow to accept our certificate and just give you some numbers on our RMAP efforts. So again, we're a small family-owned company on the Olympic Peninsula. We have roughly 50,000 acres. We have spent $1.8 million. We've opened 12 river miles. And many of this is in small segments, maybe a half a mile, eighth of a mile, 1 or 2 miles, maybe some more, but the vast majority, little bits of stream in small tertiary, secondary, tertiary stream segments. We've seen, that's a lot of cost on the upper ends for, is it diminishing returns? We hope not. So that's our effort. This is still a positive statement, because we like what we've done. And we're very committed to owning our land for many generations, to managing it sustainably. This effort was taken on for our company, had real hardships during the downturn, and they still managed to get this in their budget. We are committed to being a solid employer on the peninsula. We're very involved in our community. We participate in a lot of the United Way efforts, with the schools, with all the activities. And we're able to do that because Forest Products are a reliable source of high-paying, family-wage jobs. So we would like to have your commitment to preserve, or not preserve, but to consider the impact that you have on our rural economy and our ability to provide these stable family wage jobs. Thanks. This is a great day.
Thank you. Adrian Miller.
Good morning, Adrian Miller with Pope Resources, Olympic Resource Management. I want to talk a little bit about adaptive management because it's just so near and dear to me. But I'd like to just sort of put out some points as you contemplate actions moving forward. And the first one is simply that this system actually works pretty well when people follow the rules. And I contrast natural resource decisions in this state to other jurisdictions that we operate in. And I think that's important for people to think about. While at times challenging, I still continue to believe that not only are better decisions made through this process, but more long-lasting decisions are made through this process. That's to the benefit of private landowners and the natural resources and the public resources that you govern. Second point, and this has been brought up a couple times, systems are great, but people can be challenging. And I really want to put an exclamation point on Jim Peters' comments, supervision and accountability. That you're not going to change me. I'm going to interrupt you in a conversation. I know that about myself. But if my boss is watching me and I do that in a way that is offensive or, you know, I'm going to get called on it. And I think, you know, again, supervision and accountability is an important thing. I'd like to say that doesn't mean we shouldn't reevaluate the system and take a look at it. I think any system should be evaluated periodically and looked at. And a couple of things that I think you should consider. You know, the current adaptive management administrator and I have had numerous conversations sort of weighing the balance between what I characterize as efficiency and buy-off. You know, those somewhat conflict. You can be really efficient and you know, people might get left out of the decision-making process. You know, and on the flip side of that, you know, putting everybody in the decision-making process inherently slows that down. Now, there's not a right answer here. It's not one or the other, but this is something that I think the board needs to think about as they balance, you know, the efficiency of the process versus that sort of sustainability of decisions. And I believe strongly that that comes from participation and buy-off. Lastly, I think it's important to recognize the amount of funding that this program receives and the vast majority of that going to really the science, the sort of fundamental nuts and bolts research of CEMA. And many of these projects are long-term. You know, we'll be talking about later this afternoon the budget. And, you know, having watched that and looking at, you know, we're charting out budgetary impacts a decade out. Now there's a lot of error bars in that, but that is a long-term research commitment. And again, kind of going back to my first point, there are states that would love to have that kind of investment. And I think it's just important to recognize that all the caucuses at the table have continued to support that level of research investment. So when you look at the program, look at all of those factors as you think about evaluating changes. Thank you.
Thank you. Tim Romanski.
In case I have hard questions. Good morning and thank you, Chairman Bernath and board members. My name is Tim Romanski, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service representing the Federal Caucus. Chairman Bernath and board members, the Federal Services appreciate the board and DNR's work toward the long-term goal of fish habitat water typing model and map. Development of a water typing model and map will take time. Therefore, robust field procedures to accurately delineate fish habitat are needed more immediately. In light of the duration and outcomes of policy work on a permanent rule for water typing procedures to delineate fish habitat, we recommend the board oversee future development of a rule to update field procedures for the 2018 water typing season, and appoint a scientific body to complete the remaining work and report directly to the board. We recommend the development of a system that minimizes the use of fish presence, limiting that tool to determinations of fish presence above features most likely not passable by fish, replacing the current system in which the location of the last detected fish informs habitat. We recommend revising the fish presence detection methods to dovetail and update habitat assessment methods, or to dovetail with updated habitat assessment methods to ensure that fish detection procedures reliably indicate the long-term likelihood of fish use. We recommend careful quality assurance procedures to determine the best use of various data sets. We caution against calibrating a new water typing system only using data sets that are seasonal and spatially limited and depend on a single electrofishing survey. While there is additional research to be identified in the course of developing water typing procedures, we believe there is enough information to improve operating procedures now. We understand that additional information may help to improve procedures in the future. In closing, we value your work to implement the Forest Practices Habitat Conservation Plan through DNR rulemaking. We look forward to working with the board and DNR directly in developing field procedures for Type F streams, or DNR seeking our concurrence on significant adaptive management actions affecting the Forest Practices HCP. Thank you.
Thank you. Board Member Davies, before you get away, Tim.
Oh, sure.
Oh, I just was going to ask you to
have a copy. Oh, I just handed her.
All right. Chris Mendoza.
Good afternoon, Board. Thanks again for the opportunity to speak to you today. I'd like to just take your time and talk about two subjects. First, the topic of the morning appears to be the adaptive management program. I guess two things. First, I'd like to say that as a SEMR member for nearly a decade and as a co-chair for five of those years with both Mark Hicks and Terry, I couldn't agree more that you can have, Adrian's last words, you can have a system in place, including words on paper, that instruct how a program should work, and the SEMR PSM does just that. Basically, ensures that everyone's voice is heard, and I think often that's the most important thing. Whether a particular member gets their way, or however you want to say it, gets their position supported, is sort of secondary to ensuring that everyone has a voice. Both the SEMR process and the policy process have formal dispute resolution built into them, as you know from the policy work they presented to you today. SEMR has a similar process built into it, a formal dispute resolution process that, by the way, has only been triggered twice by me, and those issues were resolved before they even went to policy or the board. So I think that to Jim's point and to Adrian's point, if you can get folks in positions to, one, know the system under which they operate and make a commitment to follow that system, and then two, carry through with it, then the job's done. And I think there's different ways to go about that I won't delve into those today. I'd also point out that the plus side to the current system is we have generated a lot of information and research through the Adaptive Management Program. Spent over $30 million over the past decade. We've gotten multiple studies done, as you know, that have come before the board to this point. And we're just now in a position where some of our most important effectiveness monitoring studies are coming to a close. That have taken 7 to 10 years to complete. So there are success stories to be shared here. Unfortunately, as many of you know that work in other systems, usually a couple of bad stories can overlap what is essentially has been a success in ensuring that the research is done in the adaptive management program. To my second point, RMAPs. First, I'd like to applaud all the landowners having done RMAPs before. For several of them, that it was a huge step, as the chair pointed out, to get landowners moving on improving their roads. So much so, I think that Washington's RMAP program has been exemplary, that having done work with Mary in Oregon, that they have used a similar model down there. So I think that the models that have been set up here is really exemplary to that extent, that people are actually looking to Washington on how they can approach their forest roads out of state. So hats off to everyone that has have done our maps. On a similar note, though, I'd like to remind, or related note, the board chair, that our maps are actually linked to the decision that you're about to make today on FHAM. In other words, some of the RMAPs that are not done A lot of the backlog on those is in headwater areas. The reason for that is that most of the culverts that were replaced initially focused on the anadromous zone for the most part, as you know. There's a prioritization process that people, that landowners go through for RMAPs. We were part of that, standardizing that process during the five-year extension. And all those are great things because the reporting process has been streamlined to the extent where people know where culverts are, which ones have been replaced, which ones have remained. So concerning the remaining ones that are in these headwater areas, they're directly linked to FM to the extent that if once you designate a headwater channel F or N, the type of culvert that gets put there will determine whether it can pass fish, sediment, and wood, and is connected to fish habitat, as opposed to type N streams whose pipes are much smaller and they cannot pass fish, sediment, or wood. So it's critical to this body to make sure you get the FHAM right to ensure that type F habitat remains type F habitat and those culverts are replaced accordingly so that they can function and continue to serve type F habitat. Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. Peter Goldman.
Good morning, board and board chair. My name is Peter Goldman, Washington Forest Law Center Conservation Caucus. Ken, you think you're insane for doing the same thing over and over again and not seeing results? I think both of us are going to be carried out of here in straight jackets, wherever you are. Ken, I don't know where you're sitting back there, but I'm ready to go. I too want to thank the landowners for their very important contribution to fish passage via the RMAP program. Absolutely, the environmental community knows that RMAP was definitely one of the most important contributions of the Forest and Fish HCP. The rest of it is a work in progress, as you know all too well, but we thank industry for that and we recognize the financial contribution. We think it's also in their interest because preserving their roads saves them costs later on when they want to use those roads again to access different forests. So I think it's a good deal for both sides. I don't want to pour cold water on a lot of the ceremony today, but I was told this morning that DNR staff sometime today would be mentioning a problematic Snohomish County forest practice application involving steep and unstable slopes. So I thought it would be helpful to mention a few things about this FBA because it ties into where this board is going with dealing with steep and unstable slopes, the board manual and the rules. So I want to make clear, our caucus has been working cooperatively with DNR on addressing this FPA. This is not a matter in litigation. The FPA has already been logged. It was something that happened and we became aware of and have been trying to work with DNR on it. So I think that's the way the system should work. So this isn't this isn't to point fingers, to chastise, to step on fingers or toes. But it's the point of what I want to say is that there are some major gaps in Board Manual 16, the steep and unstable slopes section, and DNR's interpretation and enforcement of it. And I just want you to be aware of this situation. And that's because yesterday, towards the end of the day, DNR staff gave a very upbeat report on how Board Manual 16 is being interpreted